Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. Yesterday marked International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, a day which aims to foster a global culture of equality, anti-discrimination, and calls on each and every one of us to stand up against racial prejudice and intolerant attitudes. Despite the progress and continued campaigning for racial equality here and all over the world, the recent Matrix Recruitment Workplace Equality Survey for Ireland actually highlighted that 46% of workers have experienced some form of workplace discrimination, so there's much, much more to be done. So to talk about this topic today, we're delighted to be joined by Elizabeth Adeyemo, who works in research and content for Inclusio, holds a Masters in Political Communications from BCU, and is the founder of the Forget the Walls podcast. Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you?
All good. And as always, we're joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Owen.
Brilliant. So we'll jump right in. So Elizabeth, I suppose, can you talk to us, to kick us off, I suppose, can you talk to us about your own story and the work you're currently doing at the moment?
Yes. So I moved to Ireland at the age of 9 and I grew up in the direct provision system, spending about 7 years and 4 months in a system. And anyone that's familiar with the asylum policy probably understands its nature. We had the prohibition of employment and other restrictions that basically stripped people of their personal autonomy and independence for an indefinite amount of time. I wrote a blog post on the Irish Congress Trade, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions website, basically telling my story of the experience I had as a child growing up in that system. It's called In Our Decorated Prison. And coming out of that system, some of the things I felt strongly about was the importance of policy and practice, its undeniable impact on people's lives, the huge responsibility decision makers have in ensuring that people are being put first in institutions and organizations. However, we know that that's not the reality. That's not always the reality. And you know, the thing about, so now when we have people that want to see change happen, the job we're trying to do is deconstruct ideas and norms that have directed policy, practice, and human behavior. And I'm really proud to say that I work in an organization that believes in putting people first. And that alignment alone in vision and values is paramount in any organization. So, you know, right now my current role is around research and content developing. At Inclusio, we have a data-based approach to diversity and inclusion, helping our client companies understand their organization through the voices of their people. Using content and nudges, we're able to gather deep demographic data and just not just data, but also help your people go through that process of personal learning. That's one of the things I particularly enjoy about the Inclusio experience. So a lot of my personal experience has driven my work at Inclusio from a value perspective, the values that I hold and the values that the company holds and the things that I believe in, because I believe this is about social justice. It's about equality and equity. And as change agents, if I can call us that, we are working from different angles, but we're working and we're aiming at the same goal. And that's fairness. That's equality of opportunity. That's having a society where we can see each other clearly and we can identify each other as humans first. And that's what's important to me. And that's what's important to my organization. And I'm proud to be a part of that.
Brilliant. Sounds like a perfect fit and a very, very, I suppose, kind of proud mission. So one of the things you mentioned there, Elizabeth, was I suppose like when many people hear the term kind of racial equality in the workplace, they think of workplace bias. They think of policies and procedures that might be discriminatory, that kind of thing. But as you mentioned there, there's actually challenges before certain groups get into the workplace, isn't there? Can you talk to us a little bit more about that, that kind of side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we talk about racial equality, identifying people as humans first is always important. But after we identify people as humans first and we treat people with dignity and respect as they should be treated as any, you know, I think recognizing the challenges and the barriers that specific people face because of the social construct, because of race, is crucial in any space, but specifically speaking about the working space. When people come into an organization, or even let's just say Ireland, coming into Ireland, people are coming from different parts of the world. Their cultural differences, their communication differences, the way that we interact will differ. And that's okay. But how do we then kind of promote integration in a respectful, in a kind, in a dignified manner? And so in Ireland, from my perspective, we have the direct provision system, which in itself is problematic. And like I said at the start, it carries on for an indefinite amount of time. So you can imagine for someone who is unable to use your skills for 10 years, not knowing. They can try. I know my mom, while we were waiting, she before we moved over, she was a manager of a really huge hotel, and I watched her just be incredible, doing everything that she was passionate about and coming and making that move because of certain situations in order to protect her children, and not being able to use her skills anymore, and making efforts, but there is a gap there, and it didn't recognize her. The system didn't recognize her, even after we got the permission to the welcome. That's what I call it, the welcome into society after 7 years and 4 months. Those gaps, they need to be identified, recognized, and how can we fill them? How can we help? So, for example, if you have someone coming from a different country, do we have a way to identify the skills that are transferable? Even if, you know, we know that certain things are different, like communication differences, we need to be able to have open conversations where people can, it's all about doing it in a respectful manner. I know sometimes people can feel like this is uncomfortable, but if you don't push past that feeling, because that's all it is, we're not actually going to be able to get the barriers out of our way. We're not actually going to be able to promote and see integration happen fully and successfully, because those tensions, those uncomfortable spaces are being avoided and being ignored and being stepped over. So in Ireland, in the Irish context, they are certain things that people from different ethnic backgrounds, Black and mixed race people, they face because of their race, because of a system that has the asylum policy in Ireland doesn't promote integration. That's its nature. And so how do we fill those gaps? How do we identify those issues when people come in? Or do we just kind of like get on with it? Because that's what I've seen. It's like a get on with it. But I think having the opportunity to ask people the questions makes a world of a difference, because what you're saying to them is, I'm not ignoring you. What you're saying to them is, I see you. But even more important, more powerful, is I hear you. And the work that we do at Inclusio really and truly is really about the voices of the people. So hearing and getting information, detailed information about, you know, what your organization looks like is so important to having an inclusive culture, because it's one thing to have a diverse culture, but it's another to have an inclusive culture. And it's an inclusive culture breeds productivity and progress, right? So having that opportunity to ask people, you know, what are you struggling with? And more than that, learning about what people could be struggling with and then asking them about it, because it feels better to know that you cared enough to learn about it. And then the parts that, you know, you may possibly need people to provide information, then you ask, you know what I mean? And I mean, there's loads of information out there about people's experiences, but when it comes to dealing with people in your workplace, you can honestly get it from them. And another thing about, you know, the platform that makes it that much special is that element of it, you provide, you contribute to the culture of your organization in an anonymous way. So people don't actually know that it's you, but you're going through your personal learning, and you're able to, you know, contribute to your culture in a safe and anonymous way. And we're able to provide that data and that data through reports to the decision makers in your organization. And really, I always say there is a message of personal responsibility, right? I always kind of see it. You said earlier about forget the walls, and the reason those words were, I guess, the words that I used as the name for the podcast is I've always seen it as like work that needs to be done on both sides. You know, you have decision makers with huge responsibility who need to be aware of that responsibility to take many specific actions. We'll call it 100 little things. And people that are on the other side of the, you know, that they need to, that are affected by these things, and people that aren't, they just need to take that day-to-day decision to learn and unlearn, to learn and unlearn, because that's what's required for this progress of this path to continue to move forward. It's going to take both, all sides, all, everyone. It's going to take everyone. And it's not just a few, you know, bullet points. It's 100 little things consistently along the way, along the journey. And you have to be ready for it.
I think, I suppose, bringing it back to the organization, as you said there, Elizabeth, I think, Mary, I suppose when we talk about the kind of foundations for actually tackling this, there is obviously the legal foundation to anti-discrimination, isn't there, across all various counts?
Yeah, so, you know, what you're saying, Elizabeth, is very powerful and something that I very passionately believe in from an organized, obviously from a societal perspective in the first instance. I think it's important that we say that, but also from an organizational perspective. And I think, you know, the idea that we have to learn and unlearn is a very powerful concept, and something that as HR leaders, we should really be championing within the workplace. There is employment equality legislation in place, and the Employment Equality Act specifically in 1998 to 2015, which specifically deals with discrimination. And you can be talking about direct discrimination in terms of treating somebody less favorably based on their race, their ethnicity, their skin color, their religion. You know, there are 9 grounds in which people are protected. You can see the indirect discrimination, which is a group of people who may, an individual or a group of people who may be discriminated against indirectly, or maybe even job applicants who can't ever get to the point where they attend an interview. Or you could be looking at discrimination by association. So those people within an organization that might be associated with people, you know, who are in minority groupings within the workplace. And yes, that backbone of legislation is there, and it does something. It, you know, it allows individuals to progress complaints outside of their organization to a third party and have somebody look at it and review it and rule on the behaviors that somebody might have experienced. You have within the organizational structures your grievance procedure, your dignity at work procedures, which in theory people can access if they're experiencing harassment based on one of those 9 protected grounds. But let's be real here. There's a lot more that organizations need to do. Yes, the legislation is there. Yes, the procedures are there internally. But I think you only need to look upwards in most organizations and see that ethnic minorities and women are not represented at the most senior levels in organizations. And, you know, that in itself is a very powerful message to anybody within the organization. And, you know, in terms of what can we do and how can we change things? I think it really starts there. Diversity and inclusion is so important. And I see in an awful lot of organizations that you might have diversity, but you don't necessarily have inclusion. And the two do not go hand in hand necessarily, unless you're really carefully planning and thinking things through, having your champions, having your support, but ultimately walking the talk. You know, you can have a diversity and inclusion strategy and it can be absolutely marvelous, and yet people of different colors or races you know, can never achieve the top spot. They can never get there, and they don't believe they can get there. And that's fundamentally wrong and unfair. And it is something that people do, whether consciously or unconsciously, and I'd love to say it's all unconsciously, but that's not always the case either. And so there's a lot of work that we have to do at a societal level, and there's a lot of work that we have to do at a HR level to ensure that our own practices don't prevent people from even attending for an interview in the first instance, or that we are open as HR people to really looking around our organization and making sure that what we're doing is meaningful, that it's not just jumping on a bandwagon and being like every other organization and promoting it on our website to attract our best talent and all the rest of it. We've got to mean it. We've got to do something with it. So are there protections there? Yes. Is it enough? No. And I love the idea that we as individuals have to learn and unlearn behaviors and, you know, positively promote equality, equity, fairness, transparency across our organizations, because that's key to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said about walking it out, just not just talking about it. And honestly, being in an environment where you see that being practiced, it's refreshing. I could be speaking and just, I could say something like, hey guys, and immediately I correct myself. Not because it's like, oh, like a military space where you have to be correct all the time, but because everyone is willing to make an intentional decision to grow. So what if this was normal before? because I think that's what it is, shifting from the norm, because it takes effort, right, to actually like starting to make a shift. You know, sometimes people don't want that change. And, you know, because they feel like something has been taken away, like something that's comfortable. But really all you're doing is just, you're just gradually learning, gradually growing for the better. And it helps everyone. It helps business and it helps people.
Absolutely. So I think, Mary, when we talk about, I suppose, I know a lot of our listeners, HR people, leaders, business leaders, that kind of thing, they're obviously going to think about, it's just great progress around this. There's so much more to be done, as we said. There's legal basis to it. So how can they kind of, how can HR teams kind of begin to start when they assess this? Is it things about kind of like cultural audits, policy reviews, that kind of thing? I suppose, what's the first kind of protocol for HR teams that want to actually properly do something about this?
Well, I mean, the backbone and the basics have to be in place. You've got to get your policies and procedures right. So, you know, that is a starting point, and you have to ensure that those things are in place, and that, you know, you've really thoughtfully considered fairness and opportunity and equality and equity. So that needs to be in place. Training of your line management is hugely important, as is training of your most senior people, so that they're aware of, you know, how what they say and do impacts people who may not feel that they're included in an organization. You know, the idea of, obviously, a lot of diversity and inclusion strategies start with something like a steering committee, or you know, something that's championed by a board member or a member of the senior team or the CEO. You know, it's very important that in those committees that you're really having a truly representative voice. And, you know, so often I see an organization create committees and things like that, and they don't represent the number of women that they have in the organization, or the number of different races or religions or whatever, you know, and they tend to be a little bit homogenous in some cases, you know, all the same people thinking all the same thing, unaware of their prejudices and biases in many respects, you know, and to be a modern organization of the future, it is about, you know, having that diverse viewpoint and opinion, and believing that actually that makes a difference to your bottom line. Mm-hmm. That helps your organization grow and develop. It doesn't actually hinder it.
Mary, I suppose you'll have seen many different organizations. I know myself, I've seen organizations that are at that point where they'll say, oh, well, it's not our fault, we don't have a diverse workforce. It depends on who's applying for jobs. You'll have certain companies that are at that, I suppose, of that view, which again, we won't get into too much about how correct or incorrect that is. But you'll also see companies, I know I've seen companies myself, that will, I suppose, massively celebrate all the different cultures they have. So I suppose my question for the both of you, and I might come to Elizabeth first, is how can HR teams, leaders, or even just people in any organization kind of contribute to that culture of celebrating? Because it's, again, as we said, it's about inclusion. It's not just about diversity.
Celebrating. I think before, I don't want to sound like a doom gloom. before we, you know, celebrate, because there's so many organizations where you don't even, like, what are you celebrating? There, you don't have the representation. So, you know, so I think the foundation is developing the principles of having, you know, that inclusive culture, normalizing that. In an environment like that, it's so easy to celebrate. It doesn't feel forced or inauthentic. It's like, obviously we're going to celebrate, you know. There's always something to celebrate in that type of culture, actually, because everyone is kind of in that space. Even, you know, I know sometimes work gets intense, And, you know, we're also stuck in trying to get, you know, trying to do the hardcore stuff. But when you come together and you're around, you're in an environment where people are genuinely themselves, genuinely comfortable, they feel relaxed and calm, and constructive relationships are being built, and that sense of psychological safety is prominent in that type of space, people aren't, there is no reluctance. And the type of hesitation you'll experience is probably limited, you know? And when people make mistakes, they're able to be like, sorry about that. That's the type of culture, that's the type of environment we want. And that type of environment really, it allows for everyone to be able to celebrate everyone, right? Before we are, you know, like the labels that we have created as a society, race, gender, we're humans first. And so having the opportunity to normalize a state of being together where I identify with the next person as human first, I'm open to learning about the things that make them different and the things that have affected their experience as a person, then when it comes to kind of someone bringing up facts about, for example, Black History Month, there isn't this uncomfortableness. There is an openness to it. It's radiant, if I can say that. So to me, to answer that question, the foundation to that, the anchor to that is being intentional in normalizing the principles of having an inclusive culture. And an inclusive culture is really, culture itself is difficult to measure. It's difficult to, you know, everyone knows how it feels, but no one can provide the numbers. So how do we capture it? How do we identify progress? How do we know what we're dipping on? How do we know where the dips are, the curves are, where people are experiencing things that aren't really like, it's not a straightforward problem. Maybe there's a certain technique that needs to take place here strategically. How do you identify those things without evidence, without numbers, without data, without like, because it's so intangible, we have to develop a way to make it tangible in order for us to actually attack. Can I say attack it? Because we are actively going against anything that is racist, whether in a minor way or a major way, whether by ignoring or not, whatever way it comes across. How do we address anything that would promote exclusion and make sure that we're combating that with inclusive practices? Then we can celebrate.
Yeah. And you're so right, Elizabeth, because I think even with the word celebrate, even when I was asking it, celebrate also means that something is finished and you're celebrating that it's done or it's complete. But obviously, as you said,
absolutely.
It's nowhere near that, isn't it?
But let me also say this. We can always acknowledge progress. Right. We need to acknowledge progress as human beings to be able to have that. What's the word I'm looking for? It's some sort of like encouragement and reminds you for this is where we're going. And we all need that. So definitely being able to see each other, acknowledge one another, the word celebrate each other is so important. But, you know, as I've said, it's so key that like not just decorating a house without making sure the foundation is solid, you know, really, really being intentional about that foundation in workplaces is key. It takes effort and it's not easy. And if I can say, that's why we built a whole company to try to attack such a tricky situation that many people talk about. But a lot of people ask me, so in a practical way, how do we address it? I'm like, you are not going to find three bullet points. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. You're not, because you're dealing with human beings. It's about human lives, and we have many systems. And so the process of deconstructing is absolutely not going to take place in three sentences.
I agree with you, Elizabeth. I think, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, I'm sure you have started to hear about gender pay gap reporting, which is, you know, a legislation in place from last year, but no regulations around how you do it. But it is being done effectively in the UK. And I have the question, if we can report on the gender pay gap, and you know, we can put in place laws to look at the differences between men and women's income, why can we not do that in other areas of the organisation and look from a statistical point of view around, you know, ethnicity, around the differences that we have in our organisations? I hear people, you know, say that positive discrimination is a form of, or positively, you know, encouraging, say, young Black people and providing a leadership program for them in an organization is a form of discrimination in itself. But, you know, if we don't promote and support minority groups within our organization and develop people, and show people that there is a way to the top, that there are role models who look like me, who understand me, who feel like me. If we don't ever get to that point, then I think it's a self-perpetuating situation, in that at the most senior levels of our organizations, look up, what do we have? By and large, we have white middle-aged men, by and large, you know, excluding the whole range of other people who could be up there too, who could be adding value, who could be inspiring other people, you know, to have those ambitions to achieve the same things. And I think for a very long time, we have had structures in place that act as barriers to others achieving successes in the workplace. And so much has changed in the last 2 years, not just in terms of COVID, but in terms of that, the whole Black Lives Matter movement, in terms of the whole Me Too campaign, in terms of the whole view around minority groups, and obviously in the case of women, they're not minority groups in the workplace, they're, you know, often majority groups. But it's really about, what are we doing to foster fairer, more equal, more equitable, more transparent workplaces? What are we actually doing that has meaning and value? So many people, to go back to that point around celebration, so many people are celebrating their successes in diversity and inclusion. And I think it's premature in some cases, that there's a lot of work we can do. And that's not to be negative about the good work that's being done out there. But, you know, we really do need to understand how people feel. We really do need to understand. We need to hear people's voices, and we need to create pathways for people to achieve successes within our organizations. And I think when we've done that, then, you know, I'm all for celebrations and clapping on back and, you know, doing everything we can to say, well done. You know, we have 50% of our board is different. Yeah. 50% of our board is made up of different groupings. I think then let's celebrate.
I think it's definitely about identifying where the gaps are and taking action to bridge those gaps, to promote facilitate integration and to have spaces where we can reflect and say we identified that gap, whether it's about race or any other marginalized group, and we have taken action to make sure that our organization, it is very evident, not just visually, but in the culture when it comes to inclusion, that we live and breathe these values and these principles. I think that celebrating, say, for example, Black History Month or Pride or International Women's Day is important. Of course, they're important. So celebrating those things, there are opportunities for us to even be educated. Not that we should only be educating ourselves when the date comes on, but just it's a moment to, you know, remember again, remind ourselves again, not that we should forget, these words are tricky, but really it's just how can we continue to make sure that we uphold these things that we know are important, right? And I by no means want people, I don't want people to feel like, you know, should we shy away from celebrating? Absolutely not. But that's not the real job is in identifying the issue and taking action, you know? So a lot of energy, a lot of focus needs to be on the practical stuff that we can do. And as I've said, you know, a lot of these things are intangible, but people feel them, and it affects people's minds. It affects people's, some people aren't able to reach their full potential because of these barriers. It's limiting. It doesn't help the people, but it doesn't help the society. It doesn't help the business. Like, no one wins when we don't correct these things. To say, you know, when we try to have programs that help specific groups, it's because we identify that there's an issue and then we're choosing to correct it. That's what that is. It's not to reduce any other person or any other group's struggles. It's one of the 100 little things that needs to be done. And we have to be in one accord when it comes to social justice, when it comes to equality, when it comes to equity. And that's the ground that I think every organization should really be trying to like plant their seeds in to grow.
It's pretty the perfect segue to my final question, Elizabeth. I suppose we are marking it today, obviously, this issue today. But again, as you said, it's something that is probably only the chance to talk about today, but it's something that we have to live all year round, every single day. And I know a lot of our listeners will want to kind of go and begin educating themselves even further on this topic. So I suppose my question to you, Elizabeth, is there any places, people, any guidance for people that want to kind of learn a bit more about what they can do?
Absolutely. One of the DCU Center of Excellence has the DCU Race Equality Hub, and they have Race Equality Guide for Hiring. They have Race Equality White Paper. Those are great to kind of get familiar with some of the, I think it's pretty specific to Ireland, the Irish context as well. So that's also good. There's so many things that we didn't mention in this podcast because we possibly can't mention all the challenges that people face. But even just when it comes to hiring and racial equality, understanding that in Ireland we have this policy, and I know now we're moving towards that space where, you know, people are getting permits to work even if they're under the system. A lot of people in the workplace don't have knowledge or training about what that is. I'm pretty sure those words didn't even make sense to a lot of people when I just said it, but just being intentional about learning about the type of barriers when it comes to, you know, even like the stamps that people have, you know, stamp four, what that means. And just being familiar with it, it's all part of our system, and we don't have to shy away from it. We don't have to be afraid to ask questions if we don't know, because it's not a crime to not know something, you know, but it's when you kind of like step over it and we don't realize that it impacts people's lives if, you know, people are either prohibited from, you know, having access, or but there's a, they have no access to the work, you know, to the labor market, or when they come in, the treatment isn't fair, or they can sense the difference in the culture, or, you know, it's not clear that, you know, this workplace does want to welcome people in, people from different places with different skin tones and different names, and they don't have to change their names, and they don't have to lie or deny any aspect of part of how they identify themselves, and they can just come in and bring their best foot forward when it comes to your skills and your passion and your values, and the workplace will help them grow. And it's not just about hiring, but promoting, retaining and promoting, and that work life, that journey is wholesome. That's what we want, to have a wholesome experience. No one wants to come into a place and just be on edge. So make for people in the position of, you know, hiring, get comfortable with not knowing and then knowing, get comfortable with, you know, learning, get comfortable with identifying the issues and then figuring it out. You don't have to have all the answers. People in the field are ever learning. We are ever evolving in our approach to this, because it is about human beings. And then for people that are hiring, like you said, make sure that you reflect on even how you describe what you want for the jobs, like assessing the words that you're putting there. Like, it's 100 little things that we will do together to make it clear that it's okay to be here and be different, and you are welcomed, and you appreciated, and you are valued, and you are respected, and you will be heard. When you come in here, we will hear you. We will not ignore you. We will not say we don't see color or don't see you. We will accept you. We will listen for the betterment of all of us, for everyone. Because by doing that, you also encourage other people. It's leading by example to do the same. We all have differences.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
Yeah, that's the key to it, Elizabeth. And it's a great finish to, I suppose, our discussion. It's been very insightful. And just honestly, as we said there, we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours. But hopefully we gave some people some inspiration to, I suppose, get started on those 100 little things, as you said, to really kind of keep going on this really important topic. So thank you, Elizabeth, for your time. Thank you, Mary, for your time as well. And thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for our next installment of our podcast. And if we could please subscribe on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast, and join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic, which will aim to help you out around this area. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.